The Sword Job by Sharky335, read by CookieMom6067. Niall nudged up against Joe. She'd been playing Spot Nicky all afternoon and found him in 4 paintings and possibly 1 sculpture. Joe refused to answer about whether or not he'd ever had a marble face. But now Joe was staring at an arms display. He'd been staring at the same display for at least 10 minutes. And while Niall thought the history of the Middle Eastern safe was interesting, she was pretty sure that Joe could recite it verbatim at this point, possibly in his sleep. So she nudged him again. "What's so fascinating?" she whispered. That seemed to break him free from whatever paralysis had held him. "Nothing," he said, shaking his head hard. "Come on. We have 1 more gallery, and I don't think you found all of mine." She followed him obediently, but she couldn't help glancing back at the swords. What had captured Joe's attention? Joe finally spilled the beans when they got back to the safe house. "I found something at the museum today," he said. Andy looked bored as she played with Quinn's hair. Nicky did look interested, but Niall suspected it was just because he found everything Joe did interesting, not because a museum find was necessarily special. On the other hand, Niall needed to know. "What did you find?" She made her eyes as big as she possibly could and added a touch of a quaver to her voice. Just a little bit of, "I had to abandon my family, and only good stories will make me feel better." Joe had never bought it, but one day she thought he might. He smiled at her before he looked back at Nicky. "They had my first sword," he said quietly.
"Oh," Nicky said, "the one that's your father?"
"Yes," Joe said. Niall had no problem seeing why this was a big deal. The family had a mostly casual attachment to specific weapons, though they all had their favorite types, see Andy and her axe. Joe had safes in most of the safe houses that they spent any real time at, just like Nicky had long swords. Quinn had bows, and there was more than 1 bayonet that belonged to Booker. She was starting to stash throwing knife sets everywhere she went, for that matter. But the very first sword that Joe had owned? This was big. "How do you know it was that one?" she asked. "My name is hidden in the calligraphy on the blade. My father had it commissioned specifically for me when I decided that I didn't want to be a merchant and was going to look for work as a caravan guard." Joe rested his head on his fist, his normally smiling mouth downturned. "I lost it the first time I died." "If you were dead?" Niall asked, confused. "They were stripping the dead of their weapons. It wasn't like they needed them anymore," Nicky said. "I lost my sword the same way, but it was standard issue for the Genoa militia. Nothing special, not like Joe's."
"I bet," Niall said.
"At least you know where it ended up? It's not in some fat cat's private collection, and it wasn't melted down?" Joe shook his head. "I'm going to take it back," he said. That attracted Andy's attention. "You're joking, right?" she asked. "With the number of things you've refused to help me steal over the years, you'd think I'm going to let you waltz into this museum and steal a sword?" "Not just any sword," Joe said. His voice shook in a, "this is a very rare connection to my first family" way. And he was apparently better at sounding pathetic, because Andy just swore and said, "Fine, do you have a plan?"
"Not yet, but that's what we have Copley for, right?" Joe asked.
3 hours later, it had turned out that it was not what they had Copley for. I once again need to point out that committing heists is not actually part of CIA training. Copley sounded pushed to the very edge. It was probably because he'd repeated the same thing about 10 times. "I can get you past the security to get to the sword, but I can't get you through what they have on the sword." "If you can get the cameras to go dark, that's all we need. This isn't the Met. It's unlikely that it's got 24-hour armed security," Joe said. Everyone in the room stared at him. Niall was pretty sure that Copley was staring at him through the phone.
"Well, now you've gone and cursed us," Andy said. "There's guaranteed to be a whole phalanx of them between us and them on the way out."
Copley cleared his throat.
May I remind you that I can't just blank the video cameras? Even if they don't have armed security, I'm sure that they will call the police if some of their cameras go dark, and the police will be armed. Joe looks frustrated. Come on. Don't you guys see how important this is? Nikki wrapped his arm around Joe's shoulder. I know you think it is, my love, but your sword has been missing for 1,000 years. Can we not take a few days to get what we need to rescue it safely? What do you have in mind? Joe squinted at Nikki. Then, after a second, he shook his head. No. Nuh-uh, not them. Who? Niall asked. Joe and Nikki were having a staring contest, and Niall was more than a little disturbed by it. It wasn't like they hadn't bickered before. They weren't actually two halves of the same person, and they occasionally disagreed. But there was something to this argument that sang of having been done to death. Andy started chortling. Yes, absolutely we should call them. Who? Niall asked again, looking around. This was really annoying. They call themselves Leverage. 3 days later, and Niall still hadn't gotten anything more specific than being told that she'd have to wait and see. She hated that when she'd been 8, trying to find out what Santa was bringing. She hated it at 16, waiting for the results of her cat, Asbab, to qualify for the Marines, and she hated it now. It didn't help that Quinn was just as in the dark as she was. Joe, Nikki, Andy, and Booker, who had been allowed back because Joe was willing to forgive only because he had brought Quinn back with him, all knew who or what Leverage was. They just as clearly all had different opinions on how helpful they'd be. Nikki thought that they'd be able to help and seemed to think they were clever. Joe thought that they'd come up with some sort of overcomplicated plot and everything would go to hell. Booker didn't think they'd help at all. Andy seemed to just be excited over the potential chaos they would cause. This was because Andy was evil, and they all knew it. They just pretended otherwise. But no one had previously mentioned these people to either Niall or Quinn, and so they spent time trying to figure who they might be and how they might be able to help, whispering in the corners. Quinn had been confident, at first, that she'd definitely be able to get Andy to tell her, but even she'd been put off with a "you'll see" response. They spent more time at the museum with Joe mooning over his sword and trying to figure out the security measures around the display and getting repeatedly warned away from the case by various security guards. He only stopped when Niall pointed out that if they managed to steal it, Joe was going to be their number one suspect. She had already known that the team only had about 3 collective brain cells, and it appeared that when it came to this sword, they had all gone missing. Desperate to get away from Joe's increasingly crazy ideas for ways they could get through security, she had kidnapped Quinn and headed to the small shopping district in town. It wasn't the biggest, but since there was a large immigrant population, at least all the clothes weren't designed for preppy white girls. She was starting to really appreciate when there was diversity in her options, since she had never realized how good she had it in Chicago prior to leaving. And Quinn had amazing taste in clothes and a good capacity for shopping, which meant Niall was branching out past workout gear and jeans and t-shirts. They were returning, bags in hand, to discover that there were 3 people sitting in the living room. Correction, there were 3 extra people in the living room, in addition to their family. This made for a very crowded situation. Quinn edged up on Andy, Niall hard on her heels, and asked, "Who are they?" "They are a very select group of professionals," the man with long brown hair said. It would have been more impressive if he wasn't watching the blonde woman demonstrate how good her balance was by climbing on top of Joe and doing a backbend over to Nikki's shoulders. "Professional is in Cirque du Soleil?" Niall asked, incredulous. "Hey, someone with a reference more recent than 1900. The tall, skinny black dude looked up, excited. "About time they got some new blood." Niall couldn't help snorting in laughter at how offended Joe was at that. Clearly, this was Leverage that everyone had been waiting for, with more or less eagerness. "How about names?" "Elliot," the white boy said. "Hardison and Parker, black boy and white girl." "Where are Nate and Sophie?" Nikki asked. "Retired," Hardison said. handed the keys over to us. Now let's get down to it. You didn't call us here just for a reunion. You guys want something, and it must be pretty special to bring us in on it.
You could say that, Joe said. Niall hadn't really thought about how they were going to explain their need for a 1,000-year-old sword. But she nearly swallowed her tongue when Joe told them the fucking truth.
Wait, what? Niall interrupted after Joe said the sword had been given to him by his father, and none of the three so much as blinked. You guys aren't going to argue about that.
Nah, why would we? We've known about you guys for years. You, though, you're new. Gonna have to figure you out.
Hardison brought up his phone like he was going to take a picture, and Niall shrank back. She'd picked up Andy's paranoia, and she couldn't believe that here were these three mortals not arguing at the idea of a 1,000-year-old man.
Mutually assured destruction, the blonde said, swinging down from her handstand on Nikki's shoulders and landing neatly on her feet. You guys know enough about us to land us in prison for a lot of years. We know of your existence and how badly you want to stay out of the public eye. We both use our knowledge for good.
Usually, Elliot said, still not sure about stealing a sword from a museum, even if it's a special sword. They're going to miss it, and it's not like it's really replaceable, you know? It's going to mess up their display.
We have a replica, Booker said diffidently. Should be enough to fool anyone just looking at it. As long as they don't run any mass spec studies or anything, it should be good enough.
Okay, you lead with having a forgery ready at hand, Hardison said, because I can get behind wanting something from your loving father as long as non-profit museums aren't going to suffer.
Wait, he was loving, right?
Right, Joe said. Pretty sure I wouldn't want it back otherwise.
Hardison laughed. Just making sure, you know. Never can tell when someone is just out for some sort of kooky revenge. Don't expect it from you. But stranger things have happened.
Stranger things than stealing a sword for a 1,000-year-old man? Niall asked, incredulous.
Parker grinned at her.
Yeah, that is pretty strange when you put it like that.
After that, they got down to business pretty quickly. Joe told them everything that they'd figured out about the security on the sword. Surprisingly, he did not tell them about Copley. Apparently, the man's denial of abilities when it came to this kind of activity had sunk in. Seeing Joe get emotional caused Niall to choke up. It wasn't like she'd never seen him feel things. He loved his family, especially Nikki. He was still mad at Booker. He was grateful that Quinn was back. He was free with affection and good-natured insults. And his anger when an innocent was in the line of fire was impressive. She'd never seen him so sad as when he talked about losing the sword his father had given him. She could see why Nikki was eager to bring in leverage if they could make Joe smile. Andy came through with pictures that no one had even seen her take, and Booker had the floor plans of the museum, as well as the replica. The good news is that, one, there were no plans to take the sword off display in the future, and, two, it had been donated in the first place, so if their ruse was ever discovered, the museum wouldn't be out any money. These two facts seemed to relax the crew that came to help them, and as they finished taking notes, they glanced at each other and grinned.
"Let's go steal a sword," Hardison said.
"What can we do to help?" Niall asked. She'd always wanted to be in on a heist. But Elliot shook his head.
"We've gotten used to working together. No offense, Niall. I'm sure you'd be great otherwise."
She could hear the unspoken part about her just getting in the way. With a sigh, she resigned herself to being on the outside. Before she could get too wound up about it, though, Quinn said, "After they succeed, we will need to move safe houses. Maybe you can help me pick one and arrange for transport?"
Well, that was less boring than sitting around with a thumb up her ass, so she nodded.
As she bent her head over a map with Quinn and Andy, the leverage team left. For 2 days, they neither heard nor saw anything, and Niall was becoming convinced that they just left. Joe was becoming increasingly emotional, and she wondered what would happen if the team failed. As they were sitting down for dinner, there was a knock on the front door, and Booker went to open it. Elliot and Hardison were there, but their hands were suspiciously empty.
"Hi," Hardison said. "So we..."
He lifted his head, sniffing the air, and got very excited.
"Is that Nikki's pesto?"
Elliot nudged him in the side.
"Focus," he scolded.
Hardison shook himself. "Yeah,
Before he could say anything, like where the sword was, there was a thump from the attic. Andy went over and pulled down the ladder, and a moment later, Parker strolled down like she was going down a stairway at the mall. "Might want to check up there for leaks, Joe," she said, and she was grinning widely. Joe looked from her face to Nikki's and then headed up the ladder. He turned on the light, and they could hear him moving around up there. And then there was a sudden silence, as if he'd frozen in place. "Oh, my God," he said. And then he was coming down the stairs, the sword in hand, and the widest smile Niall thought she'd ever seen on his face. "How did you do it?" Quinn asked. "Nah, I can't tell you that," Hardison said, "because then you might get in your head to try it, and then I'd have to come to prison to get Nikki's pesto. You did make enough to share, right? For getting Joe's sword, I will make extra for you to take home," Nikki said, leading him to the kitchen. "Elliot, Parker, I can't thank you enough," Joe said, tears tracking down his face. "If there is anything I can do..." "Man, you've done a lot. Not just for us, but for humanity," Elliot said, rubbing the back of his neck as if the emotion was making him uncomfortable. "If it helps you for us to swap out swords so that you can have a memory from your youth, then we're happy to help." Joe went in for a hug, and for a moment Niall wondered if Elliot was going to duck it. He struck her as a guy who wasn't big on expressing emotion, but he allowed the hug, slapping Joe on the back. And as I sat down around the table to a meal of fresh pasta and salad and, yes, Nikki's pesto, Niall thought that it was a good thing the leverage team was on their side. The end.